Hi, Peter. Welcome back to the show. All right. So, very interesting. A lot of stuff is going on in the world. And I know you and I have had many discussions lately, and I've had a lot of discussions with many other people. And there's some common threads, and we're going to certainly be talking about these threads in future episodes in hopes that we can both better understand what's going on and also help some of our listeners better understand what's going on in the world and maybe what we can do to move forward in a more collective way. I think that one thing that I was very thrilled about was the recent response to the episodes as we started recording and publishing again. We had a subscriber reach out to us, and I've gotten other feedback through some of the social media channels. I had one subscriber reach out to me directly via email, and he asked a question. And I thought I'll just read this question on air. So this is from Sandeep. And Sandeep asks, he says, I tuned into your recent podcast and thoroughly enjoyed it. When you get a chance, I would like to hear your thoughts on the topic, human comfort zone, its implications and strategies for overcoming it. Thank you. So thank you, Sandeep, for reaching out to us and asking that question. And we're going to start this episode, and we're going to talk just about that. So human comfort zone, its implications and strategies for overcoming it. I think what he's alluding to is many of us, when we work, we might get out of school, have a job, have a family, we just get in a routine, and we're doing maybe the exact same thing every day, and those things are comfortable. And there's something with that comfort. I mean, it's kind of like climbing the mountain, if you will. When you get to the mountain, right, it's easy to go back down the other side. And maybe you stay down in the valley, or maybe you try to stay up on top of the mountain. But in doing so, you're not continuing to grow yourself. You're not pushing yourself to be the best that you can be, to maximize your potential, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And so that's my perspective, and that's how I'd like to pursue that. So having some of those things said, Peter, what do you think?
I think it's double-edged sword, right? Because when you think about it, you hit your comfort zone, and ideally you hit it after a struggle to achieve it, right? I mean, why do we do what we do? Why do we go to school? Why do we have jobs? You know, why do we develop skills and, you know, try and participate in, you know, culture as much as we can, right? It's because you have a vision for what you perceive as being success, and that's going to be different for everybody else. Okay, you achieve that success, and now you're where you want to be. Life is good, right? True. I mean, admirable, and, you know, everybody should find out what it is for themselves and achieve it, right? The problem is comfort zone can easily turn into complacency. And we both have gone through this. We've talked about it, you know, privately. And I think this is the thing that people have to keep in mind. You achieve your goals, but your goals themselves are essentially castles built on sand. And if the sand shifts, well, there goes your goals, right? What I've urged, you know, my own kids, friends, whatever, yeah, you know, you made it, whatever that is, good, congratulations, well done, a lot of work, we've seen it.
Right.
You know, you better be ready that it's all going to get wiped away and be ready to start over again. I give a lot of career advice to younger guys coming into the field. And the first thing I tell them is, yeah, no job is forever. Love the money, not the job. And be ready to walk out the door, you know, every Monday morning, because you don't know what's going to happen. Yeah, you work with people. Hopefully you like them. Hopefully you have some kind of social bond with them. That's ideal. It's not necessary, but definitely preferable. At the end of the day, you're all subject to somebody else who's pulling the strings, either overtly or behind the scenes. And, you know, what are you going to do when you're building, you know, the Model T, and now all of a sudden people don't want Model Ts anymore, right? You're mm-hmm. S out of luck, and you have to adapt. Hopefully, you know, in that example, you're a mechanic that can learn how to work on the new cars. So it's just a matter of retrenching and regrouping, you know, but okay, you got out of your comfort zone because Model Ts are nice and easy, and, you know, it doesn't take a lot to keep them going, right? I think people need to keep that kind of analogy in mind, because otherwise you're doomed. I've seen too many guys over the years, especially the older generation, that, you know, came up under, I think, a different paradigm than we did. Although I hate to use that word too, since it's been so abused, but, you know, okay, you entered the workforce in the 70s and even into the early 80s, you could expect to have a career at a company for 10, 15, 20 years. Maybe you switch jobs twice, right?
Right. Right.
Okay. Yeah, that I'll tell you, when I entered in, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, that was out the window. You know, you were lucky to be, you know, at any place you were for 2, 3, 4 years. And if you stayed longer than that, people were starting to look at you like, well, you know, what the hell's wrong with you? Why'd you stay there so long? I don't know. I liked it. I made a good living, right? People were great. I don't know. Call me crazy.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a couple things here. I'd like to carve this up into two parts, because on one side of the answer, we can certainly talk about from a career perspective, but I think we can also talk about from a personal development perspective.
Yeah, 100%. Because it's the same thing, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. But I think part of it's identifying what's there. So I think from a business, if we think about from a workplace, from a general career complacency perspective, I think, yeah. Everything that you said is perfectly accurate, and I agree with. I think I would add a couple things. So one, you said this, have a vision for success, mm-hmm. right? So I think part of it is understanding. So yeah, you set goals, you go climb the proverbial mountain. You're looking for that opportunity. You're in a... It's funny because I actually wrote about this the other day before the question was asked. If you want to do something well, like you really want to do something well, it doesn't matter what it is. What do? Let's say you want to build that Model T. Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, you have a vision for what the Model T needs to look like. Now, this Model T can be your job. It can be, you know, in your career. It can be a career
art, whatever.
Shift. It can be art, whatever. Yeah, exactly. It could be current job, future job, whatever. If you look at what it takes to build that, and you look at each of those individual components and you think about the order in which they need to be done in, and then you reevaluate the position. It's like, okay, to build a car, I need wheels, I need a frame, I need all these components. Okay, so break that down. Now, what does it look like to make a good component? What are the characteristics of a good component? Mm. Okay, now you iron that out. So what are we doing here? We're putting a plan together. We're kind of writing down what it is that we want to do. This is part of my answer. Plan it out, write it down, make it real. Mm. When you write it down, you're actually acting. You're beginning to act that out in the world. What do I want? What is next for me? Write it down. If you want to solve your problems,
you know, that brings up a good point, because now you're taking the abstract that's in your mind and you're making it concrete by recording it on a piece of paper. Exactly. So even if you throw out the piece of paper, you know, at some point, the act of doing this helps solidify your thinking. I think that's very good advice.
I appreciate that. I found it to be highly successful for myself. And it's one thing that I've always done. The other thing that I've always done at work is I'm always looking to learn something new. So I know not everybody's like this. With the rate of change that we have in technology and the job place, it's not a bad skill to at least try to embrace, because the way you do your job, even if you stay there, the average person is going to be drastically different, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now.
But, and, you know, take that out to non-work related stuff too. And I think it still applies. You know, it's,
sure.
You know, many years I played in bands, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of evolving as a musician is that, you know, okay, the first thing you learn pretty much almost everybody, you start doing 12-bar blues, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And a lot of people never go beyond that. That's what they like. And, okay, that's great. That limits the types of crowds you can play to, though. Not everybody likes 12-bar blues. So, okay, now you start learning different modes, different scales, different ways of composing songs, different time signatures, keys, et cetera, et cetera. You've now grown your repertoire. By growing your repertoire, you get to bust out of that circle and you get to have cool experiences. I mean, one of the things, you know, that I did as a musician that I couldn't believe was as fun as it was, but it was great, where every so often we would call up every musician we knew Didn't matter the genre, right? Mm-hmm. We had metal guys, we had blues guys, we had like incredible jazz players, really amazing dudes. Nobody, you know, by default would play each other's styles, but, you know, we had common vocabulary. So we would get all these guys together and just start playing. And guess what? We ended up spontaneously writing listenable songs that had, you know, 10 or 15 people jumping in and out from different instruments and the whole thing. And we all like doing it because, yeah, now the jazz guys are playing metal. The metal guys are playing jazz. The blue guys are flipping between the two. And since there is a common language to all of that, you had a platform to build on. And guess what happened after that? Everybody came out of it creatively recharged, and we all went off to do our different projects, bands, recordings, performances, whatever. And it got to be a thing where we didn't overdo it because you don't want to go to the well too often and spoil something special. But like once, twice a year, we do it, and, you know, did it, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. It was great. It was great.
Yeah, I think that's a great example of. So we talked about planning it. We talked about writing down what you want, but part of it might be to get out of your comfort zone. Like Peter's saying, it might be going and looking at something from a new perspective. So if you're a musician, go participate and listen to other types of music, do something new, expose yourself to the novel and see what happens. You know what I mean? And I think,
yeah, the worst case, you don't like it. Big deal.
Sure. Sure. Right. Absolutely. And if you're thinking about career planning, you would have to go and look at, and this is something that's interesting to me too, right? So I worked in technology for a long time. You worked in technology for a long time, and it's been good to us, mm-hmm. but I don't enjoy it like I used to. I don't, I never did.
I just like the money.
So fair enough. I like solving problems and learning. Yeah. And there's a lot of learning and solving problems in technology because there's programming, there's infrastructure, there's everything. Yeah. There's all kinds of stuff you can learn. But then that's what I did. I just jumped around and learned as much about whatever I wanted to and applied that to the next job and continued to build on that for the better part of 20 years. Mm-hmm. But now it's very difficult for me to do it. And it's difficult for me because I don't find joy in it. And what I realize is I didn't find joy in the actual information technology side of it. I just like to solve problems.
Yeah,
exactly.
I agree with that.
So now that I've identified that, I look at other ways that I can contribute to society and community and other places that still need problem solving, that mm-hmm. need conversations to be had and to understand different perspectives. And yeah, you know, everybody comes from a different place and we all have different stories, but we're all human beings. So I think part of that's been a great joy for me. And I've actually find joy in that. So, you know, just because you're doing something now doesn't mean you have to keep doing it forever. It's a means to an end, but where does that end? You know?
So this is a good point because I've seen a lot of this lately where, you know, the Gen Z group that's, you know, finishing college, starting off on their, you know, adult lives and all that. Already a lot of them have a disenchantment that's setting in where they have expressed the opinion of, hey, look, I've gone to school now for 18 years plus, and I've been prepared to do one thing for the rest of my life. Is this all there is? No, you didn't learn the right lesson. You didn't go to school to learn to do one thing for the rest of your life. Yes. You went to school to start developing a program to build a skill, a platform, a network, whatever it's going to be for you to have a nice life for the rest of your life, assuming, you know, you don't develop a taste for Bolivian nose powder. you know, it's really, yeah, you have to be flexible. And like your analogy that you were using earlier about climbing the mountain is apt because I think people need to realize, okay, you've now climbed one mountain. Nice. It's got a great view. But hey, how about you ski down the other side of the mountain and then climb the one next to it? Because there's all new things that you can see and experience by going up there. And, you know, I guess a cynic would say, well, you know, then that's just hell because you're just up and down, and you never go anywhere. It's like, no, it really isn't. Because, you know, the great explorers of the world in the past, what did they do? oh, I wonder what's on the other side of that mountain. I'm going to climb up and see. And then when they got to the top, they either decided, hey, I'm going to keep going the other side because, look, Pacific Ocean, fish, it's nice weather, sandy beaches. I'm going there. I'm not going back to, you know, Chicago in January.
Yeah, trust me. I'm not far from Chicago, and it's January now. So I might be a masochist. I don't think some people, it may not be something so stark and vastly different from what you're doing now. It might be, but it's still about understanding what you want. So it starts with some reflection and, and truly, you know, I'll tie this into the personal front too, right? So from a career perspective, don't be afraid to try something out. You might find a side gig that you can do. You might find some place you can volunteer at. You might find all kinds of opportunities to get into a new career path and try it out. See if you actually like it. See if you enjoy it. Plan out what it would take for you to get a job somewhere. And you know what's crazy to me is some of these jobs, man. I could go on a tangent on jobs, and I'm not going to do that right now. I apologize. The key points here, I'm going to summarize. Plan, write it down, make it real, spend time, find other people that are like-minded that you might be able to discuss things with. It's all about the social networks, I believe as well. And I'm not talking about social media. I mean, your legitimate social network, your friends and family and acquaintances that you may have run
through. Your interpersonal relationships.
And you just hit on something when it comes to people that are going to college. So I think if you're going to college and you're doing it right, it's not necessarily, it's setting you up for the rest of your life, but it's not setting you up to be like a chemical engineer for the rest of your life, for example. It might get you your first job. Exactly. You might start with that, but maybe you find that, no, I like managing projects, or I'm like running facilities, or I'd rather work in a lab, or, you know, whatever it is. But you're building a social network at a university, if you're doing it right, of other people that are like-minded. You're learning how to learn, and you're learning how to reapply those things throughout your career, not just for the first 5-10 years.
Yeah, and most importantly, you're learning how to deal with people who might irritate you incessantly, right? Which is another life skill that gets you out of your comfort zone too, right?
Right. Well, you know, some people are better at that than others, you know.
Yeah. But I think too, even once you get outside of, you know, academic career orientation, right? And you just start talking about personal stuff. Everybody at some point in their life gets in a rut. Now, you know, you're hanging out with the same people, you're going to the same places, you're doing the same stuff. Yeah, you like it, but you're getting bored and all that. Well, expand that, man, right? You know, it's easy enough to find today, especially through, you know, whatever, you know, social platform you want to go through, a million people that are into something that you might have a slight interest in. And you can explore that and decide, hey, this is kind of cool. I want to do more of that. And then maybe I can find somebody locally where I can, you know, go play pickleball, right? I mean, that's a good example. Pickleball came out of nowhere the last few years, and now everybody's going crazy for it. And I'm like, okay, it's badminton dressed up differently. Cool. You know, I've done that. But okay, for people, it was a great way to get out of the house and, you know, get exercise, meet other people, have a night out. All right. It's a small thing, but it's a way to break your rut and get out of your comfort zone, because who knows what comes of that, right? You might end up having great times and, you know, meeting great people that could be a meaningful part of your life on the long run.
Absolutely. And I think, so it's about the social interaction too. I think, I guess why pickleball blew up.
It's completely. Cause everybody's going crazy after the lockdowns, and it hit the right place, right time. And guess what? I get to go talk to people again. Yay.
Right.
You know, I'm not a Bigfoot hermit in the middle of the woods.
Yeah, there's a lot of implications there as well. From a personal perspective, I think the best advice I could give somebody is to be like blatantly honest with yourself about where you're at.
And the hardest thing to do. Yeah.
And you need to spend time reflecting on it and to really think about it. Don't just think about it for 5 seconds. Like, see how many times you can chain 15 or 20 or 30 seconds of thinking about where you're currently at now and what you enjoy about it and what you don't enjoy about it. And what you enjoy about it and what you don't enjoy about it are equally important. You know, if you're in life and you have, you know, 15 friends that you talk to and four or five that you hang out with regularly and three or four of them aren't doing much with their life, then what do you think is going to happen to you?
Exactly.
You know, it's a pattern that's hard to break unless you're willing to make a change.
Yeah.
And I've been there. And the best thing that I ever did was move like 800 miles away from where I was.
I agree. I did the same thing.
Yeah. And that set me free in a way, because otherwise we're exactly what Sandeep was talking about. We're in the comfort zone completely. We're waking up the same day. We're doing the same routine. We might be working, we might be going to school, but we're not really challenging ourselves to do better. And that's kind of the leaving home element. It's like, yeah, well, you got to go out in the world and you got to find your place. Find your place. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a teenager or about to be 20, early 20s, or if you're in your mid 30s, even. I mean, when I look at my life and the biggest moments that I had, it was probably 17 when I graduated high school.
Yeah, I think a lot of people.
And I was like, okay, I gotta go. And I hung out a little bit longer than I should have doing school locally. And that didn't work out for me because I was too comfortable in what I was doing and my priorities were not aligned with what I should be doing. And, yeah, and it's because I was very comfortable in what I was doing. And as soon as it became uncomfortable, I started to pursue job opportunities. I started to pursue other education opportunities, and then things worked themselves out over time. But it happened to me, you know, multiple times. I mean, even the points in my life where I was consulting and making a lot of money, at some point it didn't matter anymore. Like,
right.
What
do you get out of it at the end of the day, other than a paycheck, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I'll just be candid with everybody's listening. I got my first job and I was making, you know, probably 50 or 60 grand a year. And I said, I want to make over $100,000 a year. And I set a goal for myself. I actually said it out loud. This is the other thing you do, say it out loud. You know, if you don't want to say it out loud,
making it concrete, right?
You're acting it. Exactly. So that's what you have to do. You have to act your ideas out in the world. Otherwise they're nothing. And if, you know, I'd said this and within like a year I'd hit that goal from where I was. And I'm like 25 and I was like, well, if I did 100, I ought to be able to do 200, right? That's the progression. And within 2 years, I was at that. So,
yeah, but then at what point do you hit the diminishing returns and you realize, hey, I'm just a hamster on a treadmill.
Yes.
I'm not really getting any personal growth out of this.
Right? Well, that's exactly my point, because it wasn't until, you know, I'm early 30s now that I realize There's more to life than chasing money, and there's more to life than what it is that we've been made to think that is important to us. And we talked a little bit about that in the last episode. Yeah. But it's never easy, because I'm making money. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I can get whatever I want. It doesn't matter, you know. It's like, okay, that only gets you so far in life. That solves one problem, but can create many more. Right.
See, what I've run across guys that make staggering money. I mean, you know, 7-8 figures, some of them 9 figures. Right. Mm-hmm. And I look at these guys and I say to myself, at what point do you say, dude, I got enough. I'm out. I'm going to go fly fishing in Montana. That's what I really want to do. No, they end up being trapped by this edifice that they've created because their ego gets tied into it. And they're in their comfort zone. Admittedly, it's a comfort zone that everybody would like to have. I mean, you know, who doesn't want $10 million in the bank? But
it becomes their identity.
It becomes their identity and it becomes their prison. Because I went to this one business function once and I'll never forget it. I was sitting at a table with a bunch of fund managers. And these guys were like masters of the universe level money. Every single one of them was miserable. Every single one of them was complaining about the other guy that they knew that was making more and what an idiot he was, you know, so on, so forth. And I'm just like, dude, we're sitting at a 5-star restaurant, best food possible. I'm looking at the, you know, watch and jewelry and the shoes and everything that you got. It's stuff that is a king's ransom in most of the world. And you're complaining. right? And that's when I kind of had a realization. It's like, I never want to turn into one of these guys. Not that I ever had the chance to, but it sets, I think, a reality reset to say, okay, yeah, these guys are comfortable and they're in their comfort zone, but it sucks, you know? And how hard is it to change when you have that burden around you than, you know, when you're not so encumbered by either responsibilities or, you know, your own ego delusions or whatever it's going to be.
100%.
I think it's always best to assume, hey, it's all going away tomorrow. And, you know, like we were talking about on the last show, ultimately we all end up in the cemetery. You know, how do you want to be remembered? I mean, you know, wealthy guys, they'll be like, oh yeah, he was successful. Yeah, that's great. Cool. Like I said in the last one, I want to be the guy who made 25 grand and had 2,500 people show up at my funeral saying, wow, we miss them. We really like them. You know,
yeah, I think that's absolutely a better measure. I've studied many of the world's religions throughout my time, as you know, and many of our listeners probably don't. The one thing that came to mind right there was a quote. I think it's from Matthew in the Bible. It says, for the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life. Right. And those who find it are few. That's immediately what I just thought of. And it's, you know, you can break that down. We could talk about that for probably hours. Yeah. The point is, if you're stuck in a loop where you're blinded by your own ego because you're not being honest with yourself and what you actually want in life because you're not stopping to listen to yourself, know thyself, right? If you're not doing that, then how are you going to go out and act in any meaningful way in the world?
Yeah. And this is, I think, you know, part of the fear that keeps people in a comfort zone, right? So, you know, all the great philosophies of the world, the great religions, all are pretty much fundamentally based on know yourself. Don't be, you know, the evil, right? Be the good. Mm-hmm. And, okay, if you want to look inwards and, you know, say, hey, this is what I'm really not good at. I'm not doing well here. You know, whether it's financially, morally, whatever it is, you have to examine, recognize the fault and correct the fault. And it's the only way you're going to go forward. And, you know, the cynical say, oh, it's easy for you to say, blah, blah, blah. You know, no, it isn't easy for me to say because I've gone through this myself and continue. It's a continual process. You know, I've been broke and I've been not broke. Yes. Right. I've had tons of friends and I've had no friends. I've run the whole spectrum, you know, and I've acquired, I think, a little bit of wisdom in it over the years, and that it begins with the oldest saying, I think, globally, it's know yourself, man.
If people are being very cynical about this, if you're thinking about this and you find yourself being slightly cynical, then I would say you're not being 100% honest with yourself.
Yeah, it's a defense mechanism.
It's a defense mechanism because I've been through it many times as well. And every time that I think I'm doing something quite well, and I probably am, but then there's so much more to do and there's so much life to see, and being blinded by our own pride, right?
Yeah.
There's all pride before the fall. So you're being blinded by your own infinitesimal knowledge of whatever it may be or the way that you're living. And the next thing you know, you're probably dead and you've kind of missed the whole point.
And it goes hand in hand with the know yourself bit, right? Because what's the oldest theme in, you know, all the great literature of the world? And again, it transcends culture, language, time, space, the whole bit.
Absolutely.
You know, it's hubris. It's arrogance. And how, you know, the greatest heroes of whatever mythology you want to talk about are brought low because of their arrogance. And either, you know, it's because of divine retribution or they're blind to what's going on around them. I mean, take your pick a great literature in the world that talks about it, right? But it's the truth. If you're blind to your own hubris, your own arrogance, your own unwillingness to say, hey, I was wrong, how will you ever grow? How will you ever, you know, be the hero of the story and not the tragic lesson that has persisted for all these years, you know? And I mean, whether you talk about, you know, Sophocles or any of the great playwrights of antiquity to the modern day, it's all the same. I mean, my favorite gangster movie, Scarface, right? What's Scarface's problem, right? Tony Montana. Mm-hmm. You know, he got high on his supply after everybody told him not to, got in his comfort zone and ended up getting destroyed by it, right? There's lessons everywhere if you look beyond the surface and start, you know, thinking about it a little bit more deeply.
I think that's why great literature and works of art connect with so many people in the way that they do. It's because they're telling the same story that we all see, at least maybe heuristically. We don't see it in full resolution, but we see the parts, and those parts have transcended all of human time, right?
Right.
So, and those stories speak to us because we're living that.
Yeah.
Right? Each one of us is living that. The best advice that I could be is don't be blind. If things aren't going the way that you want them to, then figure out why and be honest with yourself. Again, write that down too. Write down what you don't like about yourself. If there's something you don't like about yourself, write it down thoroughly. Not just one sentence, but like write down a couple paragraphs about what it is you don't like about yourself, and then write a couple paragraphs about how you can fix that.
And, you know, I think this is one of the things that has sort of evaporated from all modern culture across countries and whatnot. The art of journaling has fallen out of favor. Nobody does it anymore. I mean, I guess to a certain extent with blogs and all that kind of stuff, it's still there. But, you know, everybody tends to do blogs for outward consumption, not inward reflection, right? And, okay, that's fine. I guess it serves a purpose. But I mean, again, if you just sit there and write, you know, a paragraph a day in a journal, it will help you break out of your comfort zone and, you know, get the whole creative energies flowing in the right way. You know, help gain insight into whatever might be bothering you or whatever you're ruminating on, you know, instigating as your next project.
You have to know where to start. I think that's the other part of this comfort zone concept is understanding where you're at, and then understanding where you want to go. And then once you have that, you can start to figure out exactly how you begin that journey, you know? Right. And then the best thing to do is to start doing it. Begin by acting, you make it real. Otherwise
And again, the old adage of journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, right? I mean, you know, people say it's kind of trite, but it's true. I mean, how are you going to win the marathon if you don't get up out of bed to put on your shoes, right? Yeah. And it isn't something that's going to happen overnight. You work up to it and you build upon incremental victories to achieve the ultimate victory of, you know, whatever you decide that's going to be.
I just had a thought. So one thing I would recommend is, and I used to do this personally, and I had, it helped me in reflection because I'm a very extroverted thinker, if you will. So I think about the world and how it's pieced together and the roles that we all play and the problems and the pieces of the puzzle, if you will, not necessarily logic oriented, but more conceptually. Right. So when I think about, a lot of us don't think about how we are in the world, we are in the world, you know, so to think about, you know, how I'm acting or whatever it is.
Yeah, very true.
So if you're at work and you have someone that you trust, ask them, hey, from your perspective, what do you think I'm really good at? And what do you think I could do better at? And just ask a simple question and let them reflect. And if they don't want to answer the question, find someone who will answer it. But encourage them to answer it honestly and try not to take it personally, because you're not going to grow from it otherwise. And you could do this with a friend as well. If there's someone that you're close with, you can always ask. And I did this for many years when I was younger.
I think you have to be selective in who you want to approach with this, especially in work environments, because they can be so toxic and backstabbing.
That's true. It's true. Yeah.
Make sure that somebody that you seek out for this is really willing to engage with you in the spirit that you're asking. And, you know, same thing personally, because I think you end up discovering a lot of the people that you thought were deep friends really weren't. So be careful, because at some point they're just going to be like, no, they might. I wouldn't say that they will. You know, come on, why are you bugging me with this stuff? I just want to watch the game, right? Whatever it's going to be.
Right.
I think so you have to understand the nature of your relationships before you, you know, start seeking constructive criticism rather than critique from, well, a critique rather than criticism, I guess.
Yeah. That's the way to put it. Yeah. I don't disagree with you, but the other part of me is kind of thinking, oh, you could really sort out your friend relationships pretty quickly by asking such questions.
Totally.
And I'm with you. I mean, there's a handful of people that I can ask this stuff to, and I would always get an honest response from, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. I imagine. I mean, that's what counts. You can have a lot of acquaintances, but I think the true friends that you have generally are counted on one hand. That's been my experience. I've heard it from other guys too. So
there's only so much time that you have in the day, and to maintain friendships as you get older, obviously, and distance could play a role. It always takes time, right? But I think people should leverage their social networks as well. So understanding what you're really good at is probably another good way to get out of the complacency thing. I think that most people have something that they are actually quite good at.
And I agree.
It may not be readily apparent to them just because they got into one career field or path, or like something grabs your interest. Why does it grab your interest? You know, and why did it grab your interest? And maybe further understanding that answers questions kind of like what I had explained earlier.
And yeah, I think that's an important point that people should keep in mind. Everybody's good at something, and you know, maybe it's useless, right? But maybe it gives you pleasure, right? I mean, I like painting. I'm not good at it. You know, I like drawing. I'm not good at it, but I do it. And you know, okay, it's something to build on to get out of, you know, my comfort zone, right? Everybody's got a thing that isn't directly related to how they put food on the table that they can do, right? Okay, then develop it, man. You know, who knows? Maybe it'll turn into something that you can make a living at. Maybe not. Doesn't matter. As long as it's something that you like doing and that you can build on it, whatever it might be, so much the better. It gets you out of, you know, the rut, and, you know, it helps provide some kind of fulfillment. You know, look at that. Build on that stuff, even if it's trivial. Again, you know, getting out of the house and playing pickleball, right?
It's practice. It's practicing the concept.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nothing world changing. It's nothing that's going to give you profound realizations into the inner workings of the universe, but it's fun. And, you know, you can practice at getting better at it, and it gives you an outlet that you wouldn't have otherwise. And do it, man. Who cares? It's fun.
Yeah. I would say to some extent, it's like, where do you actually find joy?
Yeah, a big thing, you know? Especially last few years, how everything's been going. I think people are desperately looking for some source of joy, because all that we're bombarded with daily is just incessant negativity. Definitely the worst I've seen it in my life.
I agree, and you have more experience than I in that way.
Yeah, well, I remember the before times when there was no internet. What is this?
Yeah, I had the BBS systems when I got started there. It was great. I look back because I was like, Civilization. I love the Civilization games.
Yeah.
Sid Meier's, right? And somehow when I was like 8 or 9, when Civilization 1 was out, I had managed to hack the save game and give myself infinite money. You know, it was all hex. I was like, yeah, this is a bunch of low numbers, but it was like low numbers in a field of other numbers. You know, it wasn't well structured. And I was like, I'm just going to change a lot of stuff to Fs and see what happens. So a few iterations later, and yeah, it's fine, man. Caesar now, haveth everything.
Yeah, now the Federal Reserve is going to call you and say, hey, we got a job for you.
Just manufacturing it, man.
I printed.
Yeah. Sorry, a little insight into the youthful ways there, but it's all about understanding and pushing. Like you said, I mean, it could be anything, you know. And I think, like you alluded to, painting and drawing. Find something that you enjoy, and you won't know unless you try. You know, so I think part of it's just going out and doing it. Try something new.
Yeah,
and don't be afraid to fail. That's also something that's. I would definitely mention here.
It's a huge thing too with the younger crowd. Like
it really is. Yeah.
They're paralyzed by fear of, you know, rejection or failing or, you know, somebody saying no. And dude, who cares? It doesn't matter. Right. Yeah. I mean, okay, heart surgeons, it matters. Everything else, no. Right.
It only matters during the surgery.
Yeah. If you're holding a scalpel, no, do it the right way. Other than that, pretty much not much matters, you know?
Right.
And well, I think people need to put it in perspective.
Even that, it's about creating consistent patterns of what success looks like. And the best way to do it is such that you minimize the risk for error. I think that that's a decent approach to life. You don't have to be super analytical with everything that's happening. And I think that honestly, some people just need to fail, but they don't, you know, like you don't need to go out and like waste $1 million in the stock market and fail. I'm not saying that. Maybe you do. I don't know. But the idea and the concept is go try to paint something. Okay, that sucked. But did you enjoy it? How can you get better? Well, there's plenty of videos on YouTube for free that might teach you certain things that you can go and do. Maybe you've never been into music. And I think that it was it Charles Darwin, I think, that he noted in his near his death that he wished he would have stayed more in the arts because he feels like his mind wouldn't have deteriorated as rapidly. I think but that's part of the joy in life. So you take someone like Darwin, who is still left a profound mark on human history through his works, but at the same time, he kind of missed out on the other parts of life there, even at his own admission. And there's something to be learned.
What you just said, the fear of failure, I think that's the number one thing that probably keeps people in their comfort zone, right? Why risk it? You know, things are good. Yeah, it's okay. But, you know, I'm not telling you to sell your house and take the proceeds and put it into Bitcoin, right? No. you know, I'm telling you, you know, go take a painting class. And if your vase looks like an orange, well, okay, maybe painting's not for you. Or maybe you take another class so that the vase ends up looking like, you know, a cube. And you're getting there. You're improving. It's right. Better this time than it was last.
Absolutely. And,
you know, if you can laugh about it, so much the better, right?
Yeah, I agree. Well, the laughing is important. You have to be able to laugh at yourself too, man. That's always helpful in this process.
Yeah. Except the heart surgeon. We want him to be serious. Everybody else, start laughing, man. It's not as rough as out there as people want you to believe.
That's hilarious. So I'm going to summarize and just recap real quick. So I think the key points we talked about here. So plan for something, like actually write down what it is that you want. Be honest with yourself. Try to understand what you're good at, what you're not good at. Build a path forward, you know, and then start to make it real by writing it down, by acting it, by talking to people, by looking into different opportunities. And don't be afraid to fail. I think that's the biggest inhibitor in this. And anxiety is natural. And it's going to happen. But your ability to... Like you can't condition yourself. And I wrote about this recently. If you get into what's called a conditioned stimulus response and you go to work, you do the thing, you come home, like, you know what to expect. The pattern repeats itself. Yeah. On the weekend I do this, you know, like whatever it is. And as soon as something deviates or the fear of failure or change hits you, then now we have a problem, right?
Well, you know, I will say one thing, because I know this growing up with the generation of my father's guys, because they went through some stuff, right, in terms of depression, the Great Depression, World War II, et cetera.
Right? Yes.
They looked at sort of falling into a rut as being successful in that it wasn't chaos, right? They had achieved stability. And there's something to be said from that. So I think if, you know, people are coming from a very rough background, a lot of chaos in it. Yeah. Okay. You know, you got your job, you're paying your bills, you put in a couple of bucks aside, you're going out once a week, whatever it is, dude, you're doing okay. Right. I mean, don't let somebody run you down for that because you've, you know, relative to where you started to where you arrived, bravo. Right.
But absolutely.
You know, have fun, you know, don't let that turn into a grind. You know, to be the point where you're sort of, you know, maintaining your castle is good. You know, being overwhelmed by it is bad, right?
It's 100% accurate. And we kind of were talking about that earlier, where you don't, you know, you don't miss the mark in that way. And sometimes the complacency is what you're doing. Maybe it's how you're spending, you know, spending time with your family. Maybe it's other things in life that you can go and enjoy. Maybe you write stuff down. Maybe you enjoy writing, start writing. You know, maybe you enjoy researching stuff, testing. Maybe you want to learn how to program just for the heck of it. You know, like there's all kinds of stuff that you can do online that you can continue to build skills and develop yourself.
And even offline, because again, now that I'm thinking of my father and that generation, you know, these guys had a tradition and all of them did it where, you know, every week everybody would go over each other's house and, you know, in the good weather, we'd be outside cooking, having some drinks, whatever it's going to be, right? Life was good, man. Everybody was happy. You know, look, we're all together. We're having a good time. It's great, right? That's good too. So, you know, get outside of the isolation and, you know, just hang out with family, friends, you know, something simple, have a couple of beers, watch the game, fire up the barbecue. It's good, man. It's good. And, you know, if that keeps you from breaking, or that will keep you from getting caught in the rut of the day-to-day grind, you know, I got to get up, I got to be at work at 9, this, that, and the other. Okay, cool. But hey, look, this weekend we're all getting together. You know, it's the Super Bowl, whatever it's going to be. Cool.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Look forward to that.
Have some outlets and don't,
yeah,
don't be too hard on yourself for the things that you've done, you know. And yeah, that's probably the other thing that I would say. I mean, some people might have been complacent in life as such that they're not doing so well.
Right.
And all of this still applies. It doesn't matter totally what side of the equation you're on. This applies equally, I believe. And I've been on both sides of that equation. And the one thing that got me from the very poor side to the less difficult side, if you will, is I put together a plan. I said, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to get this certification. I'm going to find a job. And I was relentless in that pursuit. And as soon as I got that opportunity, I did everything I could to maximize that opportunity. And that led me down a different path, which we kind of discussed earlier. But, you know, like no one in life is going to give you anything. And if they do, even if it's not a trap or a trick or something else, like it's not going to help you. It doesn't help you develop yourself.
It's what you said, right? Meditate on what you need to change. Think about it, ponder it, write it down, and act on it. And again, doesn't have to be massive life-changing things. Even little things contribute to your better mental well-being. And I think that's pretty much what we all need, especially with what's going on today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Peter, as always.
Thank you, Daniel.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode. Subscribe now to be notified of future episodes and check out our website at theallunknowing.com.